Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and Happy New Year to each and every one of you. We would like to welcome you to the January 5th Bertie County Board of Commissioners meeting. At this time, we will have our roll call.
Chair Corey Ballant.
Present.
Vice Chair Louis Hager.
Present.
Commissioner Ronald Robertson.
Present.
Commissioner Vivian Saunders.
Here.
Commissioner Michael White. Present. Chair, we have a quorum.
Okay, thank you so much. At this time, we will have our invocation and pledge of allegiance by Commissioner Vivian Saunders.
Let us pray. Most gracious Heavenly Father, we come to you now and ask God to touch each and every one of us. Touch our minds, our hearts, our spirit. By first of all, I wish everyone a happy new year. And let us go into the new year in a positive and a very productive way. In Jesus' name we pray.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Saunders. At this time, we will proceed with our agenda. And we will start with our public comments.
Chair, we have Mr. Mildred Bond.
Okay. Mr. Bond, we'd like to remind you that you have 3 minutes. 3 minutes.
Yes, I would like to suggest that upon the fact that you are taking it to heart, I will be my quick last. I would certainly like to thank the county commissioners. I would sure like to thank the Bertie County Sheriff's Department for, I think they are doing a fantastic job. I mean, I don't keep up with all the statistics, but I think that Sheriff Ruffin is worth being thanked for his job as being head sheriff of Bertie County. And with that being said, I would also like the citizens of Bertie County to be a little bit more mindful of our community in itself. You know, I am at the age of 67, and I feel that, you know, that gun power can take any person's life in any age group at any time. And I would surely like community to feel that they have a part to share in each individual safety as well as their own. And I yield my time.
Thank you, Mr. Ball.
That is all, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you so much. We will now move into the introduction of the Parks and Recreation Director, Emily Jernigan, by our County Manager Vaughn.
Good evening, Commissioners and everyone present. Toward the end of last calendar year, our former Parks and Recreation Director, Donald Mazzell, retired. And so our new Parks and Recreation Director, I'm pleased to announce she's far from being a stranger to the department and to Bertie County. While she is new to this role, she has been a part of the Parks and Recreation Department in some capacity since the last 23 years. And so that being said, she brings a lot of knowledge, insight, and excitement when it comes to being involved with our youth, our seniors affiliated with the Parks and Recreation Department. So that being said, I would like to introduce to some, although she's no stranger, and present to others, Ms. Emily Jernigan, the new Parks and Recreation Director for Bertie County. Yeah, just stand. Yeah, stand.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations to you, Ms. Emily. And we're delighted to have you on board of what you was already on board. But we're delighted to have you. And I love your smile. All right.
Sure. With Miss Emily, you mind introducing your new employee?
Already has activity planned for this upcoming summer.
Awesome.
And has also started pickleball, adult pickleball. Anyone is interested? Tuesdays and Friday mornings from 9 to 12 is open for pickleball.
All right. Congratulations. So welcome, Ms. Williams.
Ms. Williams. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, sir. All right. Now we will have the presentation of the newly hired Burke T. County deputies by Sheriff Tyrone Rush.
Right on time. Good evening. County Manager. Glad to be here tonight. And what a wonderful day it is. So far this year, we are starting off busy. So these deputies we're going to introduce tonight, we're going to need them. And all I can tell you is that they better have their shoes on and ready to go. Now they put their boots on the ground and ready to go. So tonight, I would like to just come and, as I always do, introduce our new deputies to the commissioners. And so start off with the newest one. Well, the newest ones that were sworn in today, Mr. Michael Cartwright. You can stand. Mr. Michael Cartwright come to us with 7 years of experience.
6 years.
6 years of experience from the Elizabeth City Police Department. And we're glad to have him here with us tonight. Mr. Michael Cartwright, these are your Burke T. County Commissioners, and Burke T. County Commissioners, this is Mr. Cartwright.
Pleasure to meet y'all.
Yes, sir. We also have Mr. Douglas Lane. Mr. Douglas Lane is also coming to us with 3 years of experience, and he was sworn in today. We met his family, beautiful family, and we're glad to have him a part of the Burke T. County Sheriff's Office also, Mr. Douglas Lane. These are Burke T. County Commissioners. Commissioners, this is Mr. Douglas Lane. All right. Mr. Joyner. All right. Mr. Dexter Joyner, he is scheduled to go to Basic Academy on January the 19th. He is the only one that we have that needs to get certified, and so we're glad to have him. He come from the prison system in Virginia, but he lives here in Burke T. County, and so he has been a part of the team for about 2 months. And so we're glad to have him a part of the team. He's been working, riding along with the guys so that and when he get ready to go to school, that he will kind of be familiar with what we do in law enforcement. And so we're looking forward to him taking care of that six-month school and coming on back and serving the citizens of Burke T. County. Mr. Jordan, these are your commissioners. Get a good look at them. They take care of us, and we take care of them. These are your commissioners. Commissioners, this is Mr. Douglas Joyner.
Sir, nice to meet you.
Thank you. Ms. Tiffany Lawrence. Ms. Tiffany Lawrence is one of our recent graduates from the Basic Academy Edgecombe Community College. Ms. Lawrence has been working. She was sworn in about 3 weeks ago, I believe it is, and so she's now in field training with a field training officer, and she's doing a wonderful job with us so far. So we're glad to have Ms. Lawrence here with us here in Burke T. County. Ms. Lawrence, these are your commissioners. Get a good look at them. These are your commissioners. Commissioners, this is Deputy Tiffany Lawrence. Ms. Jalexia Grimes. Deputy Jalexia Grimes, she is one of the recent graduates from Wilson Community College. She's a resident of Martin. And Ms. Grimes have been with us for quite some time. She went to school, and this is, you know, let me know that her determination for doing this type of work. We sent her to school in January of 2024, in 2025. And they had changed the program to a different program. And she had some trouble with the testing, and so she didn't make it. She ended up sending herself back to school all the way through the school and ended up making it, passing all of her tests, and turned out, I believe, with one of the highest grade averages in that school, just showing her determination. And once she got Ms. Jalexia Grimes, she came back and joined with us at the sheriff's office. And I believe she was sworn in about 2 or 3 weeks ago also. She was sworn in about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And so she's now in field training. They're breaking her in real good. She stood out in the cold the other night for probably 2 hours and was freezing. So thank you so much, Ms. Grimes. This is your commissioners. Commissioners, this is Deputy Jalexia Grimes. Okay. Deputy Markel Freeman. Deputy Markel Freeman. He is one of the recent graduates also of Edgecombe Community College with Ms. Tiffany Lawrence. And so he's been sworn in. He's been with us since, it's been a while that you've been with us. We sent him to BLET, and so he's with us. And I'll tell you that everywhere he go, he get a great rating for the work that he do. We have great hopes for Deputy Markel Freeman. He's a resident of Martin County, and so he's coming to serve the citizens of Bertie County. And we're so glad to have you to be a part of our staff and a part of our team. These are your commissioners. And commissioners, this is Deputy Markel Freeman. All right. Deputy William Taylor. Deputy William Taylor. Deputy William Taylor is a lifelong resident of Bertie County, and he's been with us. How long have you been with us? About a year or more? A little bit over a year. And he's taking care of all of our civil division. He's handled out the civil division. And let me say this about Deputy Taylor. Deputy Taylor is 55 years old. And when I hired him as a bailiff to work in the courtroom, and when he worked as a bailiff, he told me, he said, "Sheriff, I believe that I can go to the school and I can pass it." And I asked him about his age. I said, "Are you sure that you can do this with these young people, Commissioner?" And he told me, he said, "Sheriff, if you give me an opportunity, I will not let you down."
That's right.
He said, "I will not let you down." And at 50, at that time, I believe he was 54 years old, he went in there and outdid all of those young people and come out here. And I mean, he is a servant for the citizens of Bertie County and a servant for Bertie County Sheriff's Office. Deputy Taylor, these are our commissioners. Commissioners, this is Deputy William Taylor. Okay? Lieutenant, all right? You already been, right? Okay, he's already been, okay? Deputy Topless. Deputy Topless. Deputy Elizabeth Topless is come to us, and we are glad to have her. She has been with us now for about three months. Deputy Topless has come to us from Washington County Sheriff's Office and has been with us. And last month we were supposed to do a presentation, which we rescheduled for the accident that happened on Highway 17, where Deputy Topless, Lieutenant Parker was able to save the young man with the Marine out of that vehicle. And so she have started off wonderful with us. We're glad to have her to be a part of our team. And so Deputy Topless, these are our commissioners. And commissioners, this is Deputy Topless. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm going to just say, without prolonging and holding the time, that we really appreciate you, commissioners of Bertie County. A few months ago, we came to you sharing the need for an increase in salary. And without an issue, you all gave us an increase in salary. And it has truly helped us to retain some of our deputies. We're not going to retain them all, because law enforcement is a forever changing door. I've been doing this for almost 20 years, and I've seen people come and I've seen them go. But we have been doing very well with our retention rate with our deputies. And tonight we're glad to proudly say that we are fully staffed at Bertie County Sheriff's Office. And so we pray that we can continue to keep them here in Bertie County to serve the citizens of Bertie County. And I just say to the commissioners, and I say to the citizens of Bertie County, that we want to continue to pray for our community. We want to continue to pray for our county. We know that I think maybe about 3 or 4 weeks ago here in the town of Windsor, we had a violent, deadly shooting. And on this weekend, we had a violent, deadly shooting in the Orlando area. And it's something that's happening across the country. But I would love to see it stop in these rural areas, because we wasn't built on that. We wasn't built on that. But those things are beyond our control. But these men and women that sit behind me, and those men and women that's out there in the field, we work hard every day to try to find the solution and the strategies that will help to reduce violent crime in this area. And so we continue to ask that you would continue to just pray for our county, continue to pray for our public safety, continue to pray for our young people because they need some prayer. We really appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Thanks, Sheriff.
Thank you.
And again, it's nice to meet you all, and congratulations. And welcome aboard.
And please don't give me no ticket. I had one officer, one deputy stop me one night.
All right.
Speed.
Now we'll have our presentation by Medics Transport Incorporated. Mr. Doc. Hey, bud, how you doing?
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Gregory Brooks, and I'm with Medex Medical Transport. I'm here to speak on behalf of Medex and why we are looking to obtain a franchise and provide services to the citizens of Bertie County. We have received some transportation requests from healthcare facilities and patients within Bertie County and would like the opportunity to provide a dependable, trustworthy service to the citizens located here. We are based out of Ahoskie, North Carolina, and we are one of the largest transportation providers in the state. Since our beginnings in 2010, we have become a franchise provider in 12 counties across the eastern and central part of the state. We offer BLS and ALS services. MedX also has its own teaching institution where we offer classes that are on the same education level as the community colleges. We currently offer classes for EMRs, EMTs, ACLS, PALS, and for the first time, we're offering a critical care class for our paramedics to increase their education, which is a very big step for us as our own education institution there. We are currently the main transportation provider for ECU Medical Center in Greenville and within the ECU hospital network across the eastern part of the state. We have received transportation requests from ECU Health Bertie Hospital for ALS and BLS transfers and discharges. We have also received requests from some of the nursing facilities in the county, along with the Medicaid brokers, for patients with Medicaid as their primary form of insurance that are needing transport within the county. The number of patients who have a form of Medicaid that go through one of these brokers is growing and is expected to continue to increase. Without a franchise, we can only transport outside of Bertie County. Having a franchise would allow us to take local citizens who do qualify for the service to their dialysis treatments, doctor appointments, and handle discharges that are within the county. Now, you may be asking yourself why I choose MedX. We have grown into one of the largest providers in the state based on the quality of service that we provide. We are the contracted transportation provider for two government contracts with the VA medical centers, and for the Walmec Army Medical Center, which is located in Fort Bragg. Our partnerships with ECU Health and other hospital networks across the state prove that MedX is a name you can trust. MedX has a communication center that is staffed 24/7, ready to answer and assist in any request from a healthcare facility or patient themselves. We utilize a state-of-the-art CAD software, which calculates the quickest appropriate unit to respond to the transportation request. If there is an increase in transportation needs, we have offices in the surrounding counties to be able to pull from to meet the increased demand within Bertie County. We have a modern fleet of ambulances and equipment that can handle any request. We take pride in being able to handle any transportation request, be it from a routine BLS discharge to a bariatric transport to an ALS interfacility transfer. MedX is a name to trust for your transportation needs, and we are excited to offer our services to Bertie County. I thank you for your time and be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Is that the only thing y'all do is transport?
Yes, transport. We do, and one of the counties we're franchised in the central western part of the state, Forsyth County, we do have two units that are that operate under the 911 system there. So they are designated 100% to the county, and the county dispatches them on 911 calls on that.
Any more questions? Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Ms. Brooks. Yeah. All right. Now we will have our...
Commissioners, to elaborate a little bit more on the MedX, we have just... acquired a new county that it, we're doing all 911 for the county as well as the non emergency, which is in Lee County. So, but the question is also that you have, what does MedX bring to the county? That's a, you know, to sell ourselves. If we come to the county, we come with, say, equipment, trucks. Our trucks are usually about $125,000. You bring four trucks, that's $500,000. Yeah. 0.93 tax rate brings income to the county. If we build a station here, you've seen some of our locations and some of our, you know, in different counties. With a structure, it comes revenue, comes jobs, lots of jobs. Not only just for us, not only for MedX, but if we were in the county for routine maintenance or dealership, for your gas stations, for everything that's in Burke T. County. I, as a resident of Burke T. County for the past, you know, 51 years, believe in Burke T. County, and I believe in MedX as well. And I do believe we need something like this, and I do believe MedX would fill in the gap since Burke T. has stepped out of the role of non-emergency transportation. MedX can fill the gap as well as do a lot for the county itself. We've looked at a few locations for that, and having the contract with the hospital here, it it would be beneficial to the county.
It would
not bring in any revenue, but like I say, if we brought something here, buy new trucks, obviously we would register them. That would be an immediate. You'd register them in Burke County, that would be an immediate tax revenue. We have looked at a piece of property potentially in Midway, because we've also been contacted with the Washington County, Chowan County. Building Midway would be a good spot for that. It talked to the owner of a piece of property that has. That would be something that would be quick. You'd have to have something that would be able to be staged anyway, if you would allow us to be in the county. Because like I say, coming from a Husky over here, it's a long travel. So you'd have to be, you know. So yes, that would, to answer that question, the first thing would be buying new vehicles, because when we do, we buy brand new trucks, and that is an immediate register to the county.
Where would you keep that in Burke?
At this point, before we would, if we did anything here, we do have a piece of property that's already in Burke County.
Gotcha.
Right in the city.
Because you wouldn't register in Burke County unless you
we
had a place to keep them.
We already have an address this year. Home Life Care, same facility. We, you know, we could do that. It's owned by the family, the Sham property. So you could actually do something there if you did, as well as could be something temporary at that property if we did do, you know, if we did build something there. So with all that, it's not just coming in the county, it's bringing something to the county.
How many of your employees live in Burke T. County?
Right this second, I think about 10 that travel to the office. Our office in Ahoskie is very large. We have a lot of the building, a lot of the pre-authorization, dispatch. I'm a resident of Burke T. County. You know, it is, Ahoskie's not that far from, you know, for some of us who, Coleraine, Pisewell, even Windsor, Lewiston, I think it's three in Lewiston. So it's in excess of 10 people in the Ahoskie office they already have there. That's already from Burke T. County. And we also would bring, with Mr. Brooks is explaining about our education, we're equivalent to community college. So it's not just hiring someone that's already EMT. We can train, teach, and create an EMT. That makes a big opening for people that are, you know, residents of Burke T. County. Yes, they can go to Martin Community College, but yeah, we offer it at no expense to them.
More questions? All right, Mr. John, appreciate you, buddy.
Thank you so much.
All right, next up, Project updates by project consultant, Ms. Robin Payne.
Hi, everyone.
Hello, Ms. Payne.
So the topic tonight is Bertie Beach Phase 2. And we have a decision to make. And don't want to wait until next month for y'all's meeting. So in front of you, there is an estimate. We've been working with different vendors. We need, before we go out to bid, to have an idea of, are we under or are we over? So on, in your copies, there's two lines that are highlighted, and that is the general conditions, which is the GC's percentage, and then there is the site work estimate. So those are the two areas that we know that we can reduce the cost. We're coming up $266,000 over the available funding of $550,000, which is our grant funding. It's already set aside. We're trying, we keep reducing, right, the project so that we could come in under that amount. So now I'm going to flip to, all right, so here's the layout. Now on your plan, I've highlighted it in blue, but here. Is my cursor going to show up? No. You're coming in the main road, you're turning left to go out to phase one of the pavilion. So this drawing, phase two, is to the south here. And the cost increase are because of all the parking, number one. And number two, you think it's a really flat space, but it's not. There's a lot of grade change. And that grading is what's bumping up the cost. And so when we bump up the cost, we're bumping up the contractor's percentage, right? So our question to our grantors, which we have a Zoom with them tomorrow evening, is if we can go ahead and take off the parking. So what we would do is in your plan, we would retain what's in blue. Okay, we would have a, you know, access to the stage. We'd have access to the pavilion. We have to have access to the ADA parking. And we have a space right next to ADA where we would have food truck parking and extra electrical connections. So we don't want to get rid of that. But if we get rid of all of the additional parking spaces, we can probably narrow it down to come in under that 550,000 mark. So in our grantor's contract, we did not specify parking. We specified that our funding would go towards a pavilion, stage, and designated ADA spaces for viewing. So we just wanted to let you all know that's a question in front of us right now. But because we're under such a timeline, I don't want it to keep bumping month to month, right, until we let you know.
Can you mind, I hate to ask you to walk, but can you mind just showing us the parking spaces?
Yeah. Okay, so see up here, you're coming in the beach road and you're going left to go out to the existing pavilion. So the civil engineers want to turn right, right? They're going to have two areas. So this drive connects to the ADA parking right here. That stays. And then it connects to the future pavilion, which is right here. So the parking that we're talking about getting rid of is all along here and all along this loop right in here. This was an ad alternate anyway. So there's a good amount of spaces, but right now I don't know what else to do. Yeah. Unless we've looked for other grant opportunities, I'm not seeing any.
So that would limit our parking to where?
Yeah, It would have, we could do grass parking for now until we locate additional funding, or we could use the satellite parking next month. It's not far at all. It's right there.
Robin, let me ask you this about the parking. So we have proposed paving parking.
Say that again.
Are we getting rid of the paving parking?
That's not included in this.
This is gravel.
This is gravel.
Gravel. This is gravel.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. That looks like something that we're going to have to give some discussion, I guess.
Unless, you know, we can find the money elsewhere.
Well, what's the estimate cost?
It's, you've got a copy of it right there. Yeah, we're about $266,000 over.
It's $816,000.
$816,131?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have 550 sitting in our grant.
So what you're asking is for us to just do away with all the parking and just still build the pavilion and
in the stage, right? And the access. I feel like the grading plan is a little over the top. But we're going to get some more estimates on that. The engineers are getting back to us. So there might be a way that we're going to save half the parking, but I'm not sure yet. I'll know this week. But with the holidays and all.
Is NCDOT planning to partner with us? Are they partners with us on this project?
No, not on a private project like this. Yeah.
Where's the camping at?
In the west.
It's over here, right? Even farther.
Yes. So, and see, we were going to have these as designated camp spots. People, you know, two cars max per camping, primitive camping. So that area is right here. But I don't want to come next month and still be.
And we can always revisit the figuring out a parking, I guess, as we proceed.
Yeah. And we can add parking onto if we go for grant funding for a later phase. But this parking is for funding was through Accessibilities for Parks program under Part F, but it's no longer available, right? And so because we have an open AFP, we can't go for a Part F. Or it, within that system, that North Carolina state system. So, and parking isn't viewed as a recreational activity. We could get funding for a recreational activity, but not a need like that. Right?
So that's why this site works. So the LS is what you're saying. If we cut that would be the thing. Keep being buzzed.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and we're
that your general conditions.
Yeah, we've saved a lot of money on the engineers that are required, and because we picked everybody that, you know, was on phase one. They've already got the work in their system. Right. So material costs have gone up, but so we will come back to you next week. We'll keep okay. So we'll have a definite
price. Okay. Sounds good.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Wright.
You're welcome.
Financial summary. My finance director, Mr. Willard Carver.
Good evening, commissioners. Best news I have tonight is that we submitted the trial balance to 24 to the auditors today. Hopefully, we'll get some feedback from the show, and we can start moving on 25, which was due December 31st. So we've made headway. I think that we're in a good spot. We will have some findings, as you know, but hopefully we will gain points in the next two audits that we've cleared up those issues. Before you tonight, you have your December 31st, 25 financial statements. If you'll notice overall, your December of 24 figure was $18,488,554. And the current one for December 31st is $17,012,966. So there again, you've got a difference of about $1.475 million. And that again has to do with those grants that we received in advance. And now we are spending those down, as well as we have some reimbursable grants that we are doing that we're waiting for the funds to be reimbursed, such as your water plant and your 911 center. Your next page is your financial reports. As we talked about earlier, the months of December and January will bring higher revenues in. We exist on Avalon tax revenue. And currently, as of December 31st, our revenues have exceeded or currently exceeding our expenditures by $4,350,104. We have a couple of lines that are appear to be a little bit over, but they have some large maintenance agreements and some grant expenditures that had to be spent by a certain time frame.
Of course, where's the others?
Others?
The 270.5%.
Right, which means we've taken in more money than we actually budgeted.
Yeah.
And that was some fees that had not been posted in the 24 that we're now catching up. In the hiring of Mr. Wallace, the assistant finance officer, his main objective since he came was to make sure that our bank statements and our deposits and revenues are posted. We have a few items in each month, but nowhere near where we were in the past.
Yeah.
So it gives us some good figures going into the upcoming budget cycle for the last 6 months.
Great.
All right, so here's the question. This is why I get confused.
Okay.
All right, so again, the year-to-date, but the available budget.
Okay. All right, so let's jump down to your expenditures,
yep.
The total. The total of your general fund budget is $25,045,607, okay? Your year-to-date expenditures that have been actually spent, checks cut, is $10,734,000. The other part is that you have encumbered with a purchase order. You've obligated to spend it. Is the 868 figure. And if you subtract the year-to-date expenditure and your encumbrance from your revised budget, you should back into your available budget. And it's off about 34 cents because we have some rounding in the overall budget due to percentage calculations.
So I'm needing to add the general fund plus the revenues.
Your general funds plus your revenues is just showing you where you are in the current budget. So if you're going to look at the remaining budget piece back across that bottom line.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying like the available budget, the revenues and the expenses.
Right.
There's about $4 million all. That's what I'm saying. So, but if I add
the surplus that's over there,
the general fund,
right?
That's where it is.
Yeah.
I got you.
Okay. Your next item is your next page is your social services budget. Keep in mind that one shows that your expenditures are exceeding your revenues by about $982,000. That's because the transfer from your general fund has not moved down
right
into that. We usually will make that quarterly. I have not made it quarterly. I'm going to make it next week. Okay, and there again, your last page is your water department. Right now, their revenues are exceeding their expenditures by $352,856. Any questions?
Is that because of the project that's going to work for?
That one, I'm not sure, ma'am.
Okay.
There hasn't been any additional revenues coming in that I'm aware of. It's just general operations.
Okay.
So they've been doing good.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Matt.
Thank y'all. Y'all have a good night.
Yes, sir. All right. Moving along on the agenda, we have no board appointments. So we will now move to the consent agenda. First item is to approve the September 29th, 2025 work session open and closed meeting minutes. We have a motion.
Second.
We have a motion on the floor by Commissioner White, second by Commissioner Saunders. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Line item two, approve the November 3rd, 2025 and December 15th, 2025 open and closed regular meeting minutes.
Second.
We have a motion on the floor by Commissioner White, second by Commissioner Saunders. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Third item, approve the November 19th, 2025 public hearing open and closed meeting minutes. We have a motion on the floor by Commissioner White. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Robbins. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Four, approve the December 4th, 2025 special meeting open and closed meeting minutes.
Second.
I have a motion on the floor by Commissioner White, second by Commissioner Saunders. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. And approve the November 2025 register of deeds, fees and report.
Second.
We have a motion on the floor by Commissioner White, second by Commissioner Robinson. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. All right. Other items on the discussion agenda. Review of overtime.
You all have a handout I distributed to you called Fiscal Year 26 Year-to-Date Overtime Figures, and it lists the departments who have overtime budgets, which include public buildings, sheriff, 911 communications, emergency services, and at the bottom, our regional water district. So the first column is the amount that was appropriated for the overtime budget. Next column is the year-to-date expended. Next column is the available budget, which means those are the funds that are remaining. And then the last column shows the percentage used. So you'll see the most alarming one, which is, I'm sure we've been talking about this, you all expected, was emergency services, okay? So if you remember back in budget, you remember that budget was cut a little bit more than I was uncomfortable with. So we are clearly over budget there, as expected sometimes, but as of right now, we're over a little bit more than expected. But usually there's a balancing act between full-time salaries, part-time salaries, and overtime. But this time, we're a little bit over more than expected. If you take a look at the second page, as you as we discussed previously, we no longer have non-emergency transport as a standalone department. However, when the staff was increased as a result of transferring some of our non-emergency transport employees to EMS, their primary functions are to devote their time to EMS, meaning 911 calls. However, we are still able to do some non-emergency transports in the county. And as a result of doing so, we are able to bring in some revenue somewhere as of from July 25 through the end of December. We're somewhere around a little over $260,000, which does help offset some cost for the cost of running the 911 operation.
But how can it help? I give you everything, yes, but that doesn't help when you have it, but it actually pays. Because we're actually paying them to run non-emergency transport if they're doing this. So, like, the number that you're saying is a little bit, we appropriated $124,000.
Yes.
In 6 months, we spent $312,812.
That's correct.
So, like, if you subtracted it, it's $44,000. I get that.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds a lot better. But you still have to take into account the amount we're paying them. Like when it was a standalone, right? When it was a standalone.
Well,
took their salaries, subtracted this because it's So, like, just because it's overtime, that still doesn't wait to where it's.
So, in my mind, it has been taken into account because regardless to when we took them on as full-time employees, regardless as to whether we ran one non-emergency transport call or not, if we didn't take in any, like, there's a possibility that for us not even have the additional revenues because we took those non-emergency transport employees on as 911 EMS employees, correct? Which means we're responsible for them as employees. So we could take them on and not have anything to offset the cost as we would have in the past or we would have going forward if we didn't have non-emergency transport. If we get no non-emergency transport, we wouldn't have this additional 266, right?
But how much overtime would we have is the question. If we weren't running non-emergency transport,
great question.
That's where the line gets real iffy because, like, if people are working overtime,
mm-hmm.
if they weren't working the regular 8-hour shifts of non-emergency transport, they could be working overtime and cutting overtime down. That's why I'm saying if we're blurring lines instead of.
And I understand exactly what you're saying. And we attempted to answer that last meeting. So even without the non-emergency transport, there would still be some overtime. And I believe I want to speak for our EM director, I can let him speak for himself, but I believe that we will still be seeing basically every bit of this overtime, even if we were not doing the non-emergency transport calls, because there's a certain amount of overtime that is built into the schedules, even if they weren't doing non-emergency transport. There will still be some overtime because each employee is set to get so many hours in overtime each pay period, okay? So again, the primary function of employees, all of them in EMS, is in 911 calls, okay? However, as we discussed, during some downtime, they are able to do some transports within the county. So to directly address your concern, I do not think that doing away with the non-emergency transport calls would alleviate the overtime to the extent that you're thinking. I'm thinking that because we have it, it is providing additional revenue that helps us offset the cost of running the emergency operation anyway. Is there anything you'd like to add to that, John?
So at the end of this year, if we just double this, because this is 6 months time, that's going to be $600,000. Overtime.
Yes, sir.
We didn't get $600,000 in non-emergency transport last year when it was running full time.
Exactly. So by no means am I saying that we're going to make $600,000 this year. I'm not saying that we're going to make any particular amount in non-emergency transport. We acknowledge that non-emergency transport was not profitable as a standalone department, right? But we are doing it right now when there's downtime to provide additional revenue because we know that 911 is not going to make any money. We know that's not a moneymaker. We know
so
that.
I just keep going. I know I'm beating dead horse to everybody on this board and to you. But emergency services, I mean, it's called an emergency because you don't know when it's going to happen. Right?
Correct.
So, like, we're saying downtime. So if I got downtime, hey, I need you to go on this run. But there's not really downtime because you don't know when an emergency is going to happen. So either we have too many people on staff at the time to run these errands,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, again, emergency, you don't know how many people. I mean, right. I do understand the point of an emergency service. I don't want you to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to figure out how we have additional staff, because that's what emergency service said they needed,
mm-hmm.
was additional staff to run emergency service, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we gave it to them, and they wanted 16. I think
that's what that was the request.
16.
That's,
did not
that's correct.
That at all.
That's
we
correct.
We gave them 8, but now we're saying, got time to run non-emergency transport too, and it's coming in at $312,000 at a cost of overtime. That's all I'm trying to.
And I totally understand where you're coming from. But let me also add that there are things that happen within the department in terms of employees being on workers' comp or just being out for other reasons, which means that they are still getting paid, which is pulling from our budget. However, when employees are out for injuries and other things, our full-time, our employees are having to fill in, which also pulls from that overtime. So and we have to consider that
overtime.
Those items.
That's why we built in some overtime. I mean, we did build in the overtime. Yes, it got cut more than the 150. We talked about 150. So like, you got cut more than the 150, but I do know there's overtime. We know there's overtime for all of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like 911, sheriffs, like that. But if you look at where they're at, they're much more in line with 50% of the year, 6 months, than this one that's 252%.
Absolutely.
I think, manager, we have our director here.
Mm-hmm.
John, you could explain to us a little better on how this overtime accumulates. They accumulate so much overtime in 6 months. I would love to hear from them.
Okay. With our employees, we work 24-hour shifts, minus the four. They work 10-hour shifts. You work 24-hour shifts.
You work 24 hours, you're off 72. Okay, in a given week, one shift will work 48 hours. That will happen three times in a pay period. So there's 24 hours of overtime for one person in one pay period.
Repeat that, John.
There is 24 hours of overtime for one person in a 1 week period, or one pay period, excuse me, one pay period. So they get 8 hours per week, 3 weeks out of the four. And you multiply that by everybody on shift minus the two salary people in EMS. That's where you're going to get your overtime. Your standard overtime for your people is going to run you, that is built in, is going to run you $300,000 to $350,000 a year. That's your built-in overtime. That's not working extra. That's not coming in on another emergency. That's not filling in for somebody else. The overtime is already built in to that. So when it was cut, it took over half of it.
Well, let me ask you a question, John. If it wasn't working a 24-hour work shift, working another number of hour work shift, would that help?
I don't see how.
I'm just asking.
Yes, and that's a very good question. And I have spent a couple of months trying to figure that out. And unless you can go to a 28-day pay cycle, and I don't know that that'll help. But by the labor laws, will not allow. Unless you start cross-training your EMS in police and fire. And you will lose employees when that happens. A lot of them. So, I mean, you can extend, instead of going for a 24/72, go to a 24/96, but then you're going to have to hire an entire shift to cover that next day. So what you're giving back in overtime, you're adding to the regular salaries, and there's still going to be overtime built in. Going with the 24/96, instead of having 3 weeks of 8 hours of overtime, you're going to have 2 weeks of 8 hours of overtime. So you're going to cut it a little bit, but I don't think you're going to cut it enough at what you're looking at. So I'm still looking, I'm still investigating, but I have not found any other way really to do other than what we're doing.
So
and we are really pushing to try to keep from people working overtime.
Right. So how much was overtime for EMS last year in December? I mean, I know you don't know that right off hand. I'm saying, right. Like, look at that and compare it to this. I don't think it's going to be the same. And when you look, because this has been brought to me, I just shared it. But like, when you look at who makes the most money in the county, it ain't you. You're not at the top. And out of the top 20, 10 of them are EMS workers. So, I mean, I'm not trying to cut anybody's money, but I am trying to do a due diligence to the citizens of Berkshire County about how we spend their money.
Correct.
And so, like, that's the part that I'm trying to just bring to the forefront here, because, like, we gave you 8 additional people, and we're still spending. And I go back to the website, because we are – on the website, we're advertising for a non-emergency part-time person right now.
That should have been removed.
So that's what I'm saying. Like we're advertising for non-emergency transport. Yeah, that needs to come down.
Yeah, that should have been removed.
Yeah, that must be like. No, sorry, I'm not sure that was still up.
Yeah, because what, we haven't even had anybody ask about that. So.
We're bleeding in overtime. We got to figure out how to stop bleeding. You know, you know how EMS and EMT and you know how all of it works. You don't stop the bleeding. We all know the outcome.
Chairman, I know one thing. Discussing it tonight is not going to stop the bleeding. So what we need to do is table this, and we need to call a meeting and meet as a board and have a long, drawn-out session to do something about it and come up with something. But continuing to talk about it is only going to have us there to 11 o'clock tonight, and it's not going to solve anything until we sit down as a board and make some decisions. That's just my two cents.
We're not making a decision on anything tonight anyway. We're just hearing the presentation. And
I understand.
Thank you, man. Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's going to be real important that we listen to the recommendations of the county manager and the director. Because the director is boots on the ground. He knows what he needs. The county manager oversees the budget. If we don't take the recommendation of them two, of what we need to do in this process, we're never going to get a solution to it. I mean, that's just my two cents.
I agree.
And I agree with you, Commissioner Harvey, Vice Chair, that we need to have a special call meeting and discuss this because we're just spinning the wheels doing it like this.
All right, but we thank you for those updates. Thank you, Buster. At this time, we're going to move to our update on destruction of the animal shelter.
Commissioners, we are moving forward in with the construction of the new animal shelter. So as of right now, where we stand, the initial payment that was required by Horizon Structures, once an invoice was received, that payment has been taken care of. They have received that and acknowledged it. Next, they have sent us a draft of drawings of the shelter. So once our team meets and approves that, the official drawings will take 4 to 6 weeks to complete. After that, the construction and delivery of the prefab shelter will take 4 to 8 weeks to be done. And during that time, we'll be working with Allison, Economic Development Director and Maintenance Director Anthony Rasko with getting the concrete slab installed. So by the end of April, beginning of May, we should expect to have our shelter delivered.
Can they give us a starting date, a letting date of project?
So they're going to do it. The construction will be outside, and they'll bring it in. It's a prefab building. So what they're going to, again, they're in the process of doing the drawings now. Once we approve the draft of the drawings, they will provide official drawings, and then construction and delivery will take 4 to 8 weeks. So they have not given us a hard deadline yet. It's once hard they deadline. once they do the drawings, then they'll go right into the construction and delivery.
Okay. So the most important part of this is it's in their hands. We're waiting on them now.
Yes. Well, it's a combination of things. So they're waiting on us to approve this to the draft of the drawings. We recently got those. Okay. We're going to let them know pretty soon this week, okay, we approve, or if any changes are needed, we'll discuss that. But after that, it will take 4 to 6 weeks for the official drawings, which that puts us at the end of this month or mid-February. After that, the construction of the building will take place.
Okay. Thank you so much. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask that fine that we got, how are we going to, address that, or how will we address that? Or did we get a $6,500?
We absolutely did, and I'm working with the Department of Agriculture now. There's a possibility that we will not have to pay that, but I'm working with the Department of Agriculture to make sure that we are meeting the requirements of General Statute and of the Animal Welfare Act, and through the communication with her, she'll let us know what steps. It is a possibility that those fees can be
waived.
Yes. Dismissed.
Yes. Yes. But that has not been confirmed, but I will keep you all informed.
Okay. Now we move to approve the bid for the ambulance remount.
Commissioners, in your packets, and I can let EM Director speak to this also, but in your packet, you will see that D3, page 70, four bids were received. The first one, which is on page 70, from Carolina Remount, is the recommended vendor to go with. If you'll take a look, the last two on pages 72 and 73, those were the highest bids. The two lowest bids were Carolina Remount at 152 and Southeastern Specialty Vehicles at 135. So the preference is Carolina Remount because it's not considerably more expensive, and they can start in March 26. There's a delivery will be in 90 to 120 days, which will make the ensure that the budget will be that this project will be completed in this budget year. So in terms of timeliness, Carolina Remount can meet those needs, and that is the recommendation of our EM director, and he's even seen some of their work in a neighboring county. So if any questions, we're available to answer, but if the board would approve us moving forward with the vendor Carolina Remount to move forward with this ambulance remount, that would be great.
I move that we bid for ambulance remount by Carolina Remount for 152,093.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor by Commissioner White to accept Carolina.
Second.
We have a second by Commissioner Roberts. All in favor of moving forward with Carolina as far as the bid of the remount, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. So moved.
Aye.
Now we will discuss the mayor's and commissioner's dinner for January 8, 2025 in Kelford.
That was up here for simply a reminder to make sure that everyone was aware of that. Is there anything that you wanted to add? Start time at 7 o'clock, as usual.
Okay. All right. We'll now move to Commissioner's Report. Commissioner Robson.
Mr. Chairman, I ask the manager, and we briefly discussed this, about Alamo Audit. Needed to be placed on the November ballot for the citizens of the county to vote on nay or yay.
That's for
the November ballot, the general election. For the Alamo Audit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, to be put on the ballot and let the people vote. Yay or nay. Too many phone calls, too many stray dogs, and everything else running loose. Other information I have is shared with the citizens of Berkshire County. I have been in contact with the VP, the Vice President of Ferro Gas, and we are trying to negotiate a price that is a wholesale price for all the citizens that is a church-going member. In the church in the county. His name is Masenda Gayu Sender. And the other item I have for commission report is I ask everybody to fact check AI because a lot of things is incorrect that they are sending out. So you want to be careful. You want to make sure, and the reason you want to be sure and check behind fact, behind AI is that they're not regulated by anyone. And when things are not regulated by anyone, anything can happen. So, you know, you take the risk. Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner White? Commissioner Saunders.
Happy New Year. I just want to just update everyone on the boards and what's going on. The Meeting Housing Authority Board that served as chair. All our housing units in Berkeley County are full, Windsor Oak and Orlando. The Economic Development Board, we met with Ms. Brown, and she has some great ideas. She is doing a super job in letting us know where we need to go as a county. She's truly enjoying working with Berkeley County. She has a lot of great ideas. The Attainment Advisory Commission has not met because of the holidays. The Jail Commission, we will soon have a jail administrator secretary, hopefully. The lead candidate, some things has happened and we lost her. We're up to almost full staffing for the Jail Commission. The Fire Commission will meet on Thursday. I'm learning some great things about the firefighters in this county. Some of them, you just thinking they're firefighters, and there's some very intelligent young men and women that works with the Fire Commission. The Berkeley County Vitality Center provides soup and sandwiches every Thursday and every Tuesday at 12 o'clock. And we invite everyone, firefighters, anybody in the area, come get some lunch, fellowship. We have a great time. We're starting an organization, which we're working with the Mideast Commission and Workforce Development Board. It's called Careport Youth Commission. And with this commission, we're working with Brian Buck and his community people. We're working with community people throughout the county. We're trying to set the tone for mental health and to kind of stop some of this gang violence that's going on in the counties. So our Care for Youth meeting will be January the 20th at the Vitality Center. You're welcome to come. The TDA, as Ms. Arsini stated last, we just got our first little bit of money, so we will be coming back next month with some of the things that we will be doing. One of the big things we're trying to do now is have a welcome center in each part of the county, so when people come in, they'll have somewhere to go to find out information about Berkeley County. Happy New Year.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Saunders. And the only report I have, well, not really a report, just a concern. Citizens are reaching out, on our next meeting, we need to address the issue of what we're going to do as far as proceeding or standing still with the assistant county managers. Just receiving some concerns about that, and just want to make sure that we address it and have those citizens. But with that being said, we'll now move to our county manager's report.
The only item I have is that we held our annual opioid meeting in the community meeting room on December 16th, and we received some interesting feedback in terms of how those funds should be spent. Some of the individuals who presented have already presented to the board before, such as business owner Mona Epps and Danica Beach-Belts. But in addition to them, we had the executive director from Trillium, as well as executive director from Albemarle Regional Health Services. And so again, people provided their input. We have a few in public, in person, as well as a few via Zoom. And so we will plan to meet a little bit more often than we have in the past. The requirement, according to our MOA with NCACC, is to have at least one annual meeting, and we've been meeting that requirement. However, we would like to start meeting a little bit more so that we can expend the funds. We have quite a bit of funds that have accumulated at this point. I believe the last amount, and I can confirm that next meeting, was around about $400,000. And so we will meet soon. Some of the feedback that we received during the last meeting was for us to have someone who has experienced opioid use or who has recovered from that disorder to kind of give us some insight into what they feel would be most helpful when it comes to using those funds. So we're working toward being able to have someone who can speak from that perspective,
at the meeting, and once that meeting date has been confirmed, we will make sure that the public is aware.
Which plan we're going with, A or B?
Not officially, but unofficially we have, and of course we welcome your feedback with that, but okay. It seems like option A is the popular one, and that will require the least amount of documentation and planning and that sort of thing. So I think it might be in our best interest to go with that option, but we have not officially decided on an option yet. Yes, so if anyone has any feedback, please let us know so that we can research and get some answers to those questions and provide you all very soon, relatively soon, with the recommendation so we can start using those funds.
Thank you for that report. Now we have our county attorney's report.
Never quit.
Good year, bad year. Okay, so we're now to the point where we reopen for public comments. And please, ma'am, please, sir, be mindful that we have 3 minutes. We have 3 minutes. Are there any public comments? Sure.
Meet Mr. Valance asked me if I would had any comments about the overtime that y'all have. We run 24/7. We have very little overtime. Our paramedic trucks run 24/7, 24/72, just like the county does. We also run 12-hour shifts. That shift variates from a 3-on, 4-all, 3-on, kind of like with Nucor, some of the other counties do. If you do the math, and how a lot of the overtime comes is when you're running a 24-hour shift, somebody picks up another shift because you're missing somebody. Yeah. Well, you're running a 24, you're off 24 hours, you pick up another 24-hour shift. Don't take any of those to add up hundreds of thousands of dollars. You shrink down half your staff to a 12-on, 12-off, and I don't know if that would dilute some of your employees or something like that, because some of them are not. But, you know, a lot of the BLS, if you ran 12-on, 12-off, even though you do have a medic on staff, your BLS staff is running 12-on, 12-off, where they leave somebody else, so you're not actually picking up, two people not picking up that shift. If you do the math on 24/72, comes out 2,190 hours. The average person 40 hours a week is 2,080 hours. 12-on, 12-off, exact same thing, 2,190 hours, which each person should only be getting with that shift 100 hours of overtime, 110 hours of overtime. But when you run a 24-hour shift for every single person, which is very expensive, we're in the private sector, we're not into the, you know, when you do that shift, when you pick up a second shift, it's a 24-hour shift, it's not a 12. So if you did have someone that was, you needed a shift, having a little bit of a 12-hour shift there saves the county tons and tons of money.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any more public comments? More? That being said, we now need a motion to go into closed session.
So moved.
According to North Carolina General Statute 143-318.11A3, 4, and 6. We have a motion by Commissioner White, second by Commissioner Simons. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. We thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for coming out. We will now be going into closed session. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, 6, right? 6. I'll see you now.
How you doing, sir? Happy New Year to you. Excuse my seat.
Thanks, man.
Excuse me. We need a motion to come out closed session.
Second.
We have a motion to come out closed session by Commissioner Saunders, second by Commissioner White. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. All right. We're officially out of closed session. County manager, you want to check, see if there's
yes.
anybody in the waiting
room? Deshaun, is there anyone in the waiting room?
It's copy down again.
No, there's. Oh, yes, there are.
I'm trying to bag up here. Ghetto
they back.
Yes, they shut out to me.
All right. Good to go, Counterman. All right, we're officially out of closed session. We welcome everyone back, and we will now entertain a motion to adjourn this meeting.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion to adjourn the meeting by Commissioner Saunders, second by Commissioner White. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Meeting adjourned.